Hello, welcome to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Scott, I wish I could say that I was doing great, but, you know, we're coming off of a loss to Central Florida in the much-anticipated game. It was cool. It was, yeah, they were on game day for the first time ever. They had Herbie and Fowler in the stands talking about them on a Saturday night in primetime since, I think, the UConn game in 2009. So, you know, from an atmosphere environment standpoint, it was nice to kind of feel like UC football was back on that big stage again. But, you know, obviously the outcome after pretty much like 8 minutes into the game was pretty disappointing. What were your thoughts on Saturday night?
Kind of the same. It was like one of like the kind of like rowdiest atmospheres they've played in front of in years. So like just by that aspect, it felt like a pretty huge deal. And it was really fun to see them get like the little features on game day. And like nobody picked them to win. But it was still like kind of cool to see like them in the big end game. Where like Corso like comes out dressed as the
knight.
Yeah. Like completely dressed as the knight. That was kind of funny. But yeah, like let's just dive into the game. Bearcats like play tough early, but it seems like they blow what like a 17 million chances to like take control of the game early. Like fall behind like 21-6 at halftime and it was pretty much over. 38-13 final. What was like your big takeaway from this one? Because I just throw mine out there first. It's like this team has come back, like talent wise and like as a team wise, like from the abyss. But this really showed how far behind they are of like the upper echelon teams, because like Central Florida just like out-athleted them on both sides of the ball, and like it really showed because the Bearcats didn't have that like depth to keep throwing people out there, and like once they broke down, they really broke down.
Yeah, so I came into this game and I said it Saturday morning. My whole mindset was I had no real expectations going into this game. I didn't expect UC to win. I was hopeful they could win. I thought if a few balls bounced their way, they could have won. You know, there was several things in their favor. You know, they have one of the best defenses UCF has faced over this, you know, long something like what 20 something game winning streak. So they had a lot of things in their favor going into this game. But my mentality heading into Saturday night was just to kind of really enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy being in the spotlight. You know, I had a couple of beers, I popped some popcorn, had some chips, I got some peanut butter M&Ms, I was hanging out on my computer without a kid for the first time ever. My wife was in bed, so I could turn up the volume in the basement as loud as I possibly wanted to. I was there for just the atmosphere of it and just enjoying the football game. So, you know, coming out of it, I was disappointed that they lost. I was disappointed that they really didn't put a much of a fight outside of really the first half, as UCF really started to pull away in the second and third quarter. But as far as like overall expectations, yeah, I agree that it's like, you know, Central Florida just shows how far ahead they are of UC. But if we think about it, you know, UCF was a no-win team just like 3 years ago, wasn't it? 2015 or 2016? They had to build their way back up to where they are now. They're really essentially where UC is probably going to be in 2019 and 2020. They just don't have the horses right now, and they're not experienced enough. So as far as, like, you know, any major takeaways, they just need time. Like, this team just needs more time. Like, I think they're going to absolutely take this experience with them and just murder teams next season because, they return basically everybody. They'll have a lot of turnover on the defensive line, but they get everyone back in the secondary and the linebacker core. They get basically everybody back on the offense except for Garrett Campbell and Khalil Lewis. They're primed to steamroll teams next season and use Saturday's game as not just a means of looking at film and trying to find corrections, but seeing what the carrot is on the end of the stick and what they can aspire to be going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough point. It's like this is like the first year they've been good in a number of years, and like you can see like where like this journey ends. Like it seems like the number one thing they need to do is get speed, like on the defensive side of the ball especially. And hopefully some of these recruits they have coming in will help. Then it was like on the other side of the ball, it's like their receivers, like we kind of harped on it earlier in the year, like outside of Khalil Lewis, like nobody did anything on that side of the ball. And some of that was Ridder was like really not great. Like when he was forced to throw the ball, and like that really showed. But he didn't really target anyone besides Khalil Lewis. Like 26 attempts, he threw 11 of them at Khalil Lewis, and like they did a really good job of trying to contain Lewis in that game. Like he had a nice game, then he got injured. So it's like you really need somebody to step up, and hopefully like next year, like as you mentioned, they have a lot of these guys coming back, but you can't really take zeros from like Medeiros and DeGore didn't really have any type of big game. He's kind of fallen out of the offense, which I don't really like.
So if there was one big problem I had with the game, and you know, like defensively, like you mentioned, like they don't have enough forces, you know, to keep up with UCF's receivers, and we saw it, like. As soon as Mackenzie Milton and Mark Heupel, I can't remember his coach's name.
Josh Heupel.
Oh, Josh. Ugh. As soon as Heupel and Milton started to get on the same page and got into a rhythm, they basically just turned it up to another gear and marched their way downfield at will. Like, they were darting passes left and right, hitting them downfield whenever they wanted to. A lot of well-designed plays out of their offensive coordinator to take advantage of a UC defense that, while talented, is young and does need to, you know, get a little bit more experience and a little more speed back there. But it really showed the juxtaposition from what we saw from UC's offense on Saturday. Granted, you're playing freshmen all over the place. Ritter's a freshman. I mean, he's shown to be kind of a little shaky this year because he's so inexperienced. But my question coming out of that game was, you know, where was the same kind of creativity and means to get players open that Denbrock should have brought into that game? Because all throughout that first half, they were stuffing Michael Warren up the middle. They were putting seven in the box. They were spying on Ridder. They had 379 yards of total offense, but I mean, some of that came in garbage time, and the receivers could never get off their blocks because they were playing tough man-to-man coverage. Like, where was all the screens? Where were the passes over the middle? Where was the checkdowns to DeGuara? Why was the tight end not used at all? To your point, like, if we're talking about major takeaways as we look at through the end of the season and going into next year, that's where I'm a little torn on Denbrock as far as kind of like what he did coming into that game and then how he made adjustments and or lack thereof or made them too late and were really kind of hurt UC's chances of really winning that game.
But, like, I didn't really like the game that he called. It seemed like they got, I don't know, like really too predictable at times. But also it seemed they called plays that were just too long. And it's like Central Florida that kind of did the same thing early where it seemed like they would call some of these bombs and then UC was able to get pressure on Milton. But like then they kind of switched it up and started going really quick. And it seemed like Ritter, like if it was the line or if it was the scheme, like he was throwing on the run like almost half the time.
Yeah.
Like just like
oh yeah.
Like looking at the advanced stats, it's like on their standard downs, like just when it was like first and 10 or whatever, he's 2 of 11 for 20 yards. And like that just threw them behind the sticks so often. And like at some point, like that really killed him, especially when they got inside the inside the 40 early in the game, where you have to settle for 2 field goals. And settling for field goals is like poison yeah. for this team. Like nothing against like poor kicker, but like he's not good, and he's not going to be like their kicker when they're good. And
he's a freshman, right? Like I can kind of forgive him for you know missing a few field goals, but it's like to expect him to perform in that environment on a consistent basis is yeah.
I mean, he's 5 of 10 going into the game, and then he has a 38-yard field goal he should have made, Cole Smith, and then a 41-yard field goal they have to settle for, and everybody in the stadium knew they weren't going to make it. And it gets blocked and taken for a huge stick return and like kind of just really swung the game. Like, if they're not kicking short field goals, like, their kicking game is, like, almost in trouble. Like, he's 2 of 5 from 40 to 49, and 0 of 4 yeah. from 30 to 39, which is kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, and I don't know. I kind of have to go the other direction. I feel like he's shown signs of consistency, but then just kind of teetered off at the end of the season. I don't know if it's like a head case thing, that something happened with Liano. He doesn't seem injured. I just kind of hope that, you know, as he matures, he just kind of builds up that confidence and is able to, you know, take that into his sophomore and junior and senior year and become a kicker that can, you know, hit those mid-range shots pretty consistently. I don't know. That for me wasn't like the biggest issue of the game. I mean, he cost them 7 points, but the offensive game planning, like I thought Demprock had a decent plan coming in. He's going to lean on UC strength, which is Michael Warren in the run game and that inside zone. But he just kept hitting it and hitting it and hitting it and not deviating until it was pretty much too late. Like, I don't think I saw a screen pass until UCF was already up 21-6 in the second half. Like, why didn't you go to that in the first quarter to kind of, you know, take some pressure off of the offensive line that was getting mauled and your freshman quarterback? Like, that's where I'm a little concerned about the team and the program going forward. If that's the kind of mentality that Denbrock had as he was, you know, feeling out UCF's defense throughout this game, he was either too late to apply adjustments or he didn't make enough adjustments at all. And I don't know. Program's going in the right direction, but I still have a few question marks about the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, just to be clear, I wasn't throwing Cole Smith under the bus. I don't think he wasn't the reason they lost. I think a lot of it was the play calling. And I didn't really like Denbrock's play calling last year. And I wouldn't mind if like Fickell shook up that position. Because like their offense yeah. as a whole hasn't been very good. Like this season, they rank 86th in S&P. Like, and with like a young quarterback, I think you could like roll the dice and try to see if like you could find somebody who was like a little bit more creative and like exciting. It's like in a game like this, it's like you needed to do something different. Like once like I know like they ran the ball pretty well, but as you mentioned, a lot of it seemed like it came late when like Central Florida was like throwing in the backups. And so you just have to finish drives, like, which is like the greater overall point. Like it should have been at least what, like 16 to 21 at halftime. And they just left so many points on the field.
Yeah.
And like, you can't do that against a team that good. And it killed them. Cause like once you fall behind and then you just get out of what you do best, which is like give the ball to Michael Warren and the running backs a ton. Like it's pretty much over, and like they converted third downs pretty well, like 11 to 20. But it seemed like they missed the wrong ones, and Central Florida just pounced on them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, coming into this game, you kind of had a – UC was a seven-point dog. They were on the road. They, you know, no one gave them a chance. They're playing one of the best offenses over the last two seasons. You know, they had to play pretty much mistake-free football for most of that game. And, I mean, just three fumbles is not going to do it. You know, it's they had to have maximum like one turnover, and they had way more than that, and that just was not going to cut it against Central Florida because they pounced all over that.
Oh yeah, like another like one of the big keys is like not turning the ball over, and like the defense like forced a fumble right off the bat, scored a touchdown, and then it was like all the good times it seemed like were over from there. Because, like, Ritter, like, one of his biggest things this year has been holding the ball, like, keeping possession of the ball. And he fumbled, what, three times? Like, one of them in the red zone. Like, you can't, like, before the half, just, like, a huge missed opportunity. Like, not even giving yourself a chance to score. And, like, one fumble he had, he shouldn't have even taken. Cause he's got to slide. Like, you can't have your quarterback going, like, 10 yards down the field and letting him take those gigantic hits. Like, fumble or not, the game was over by then. But, like, he can't expose himself to monster hits in the open field. Like, that was, like, almost like a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, everyone's going to want to complain about, like, and it's kind of rightfully so, you know, a potential targeting by the defensive player. But, I mean, Ritter exposed himself to that. I assume you're talking about the one where he was hit along the UCF sideline. They called it a fumble. Then they didn't call it a fumble, and they called it a fumble again, and it ended up being UCF's ball. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. I mean, it's like Ritter. The defender should have maybe been called for targeting, but at the same time, like, Ritter has to have the sense to not expose himself in those kinds of situations, get battered around like that. Like, just get down. You know, it's not worth it getting a 1 or 2 yards if you're knocked out of the game. I think that'll all come with maturity. And that's kind of like, I feel like that's like my theme of this game that we saw on Saturday. We saw an immature team facing a wrecking ball, essentially, that, you know, they were in UC's spot 2 years ago, and it's just going to take time.
Yeah, it's just going to take time. And, like, we saw, like, some positives. Like, the defense got after it early. They got, like, Milton a couple times. But, like, then, like, this, like, some of, like, the holes just started to show, like they do. Like, when your team is just, like, a talent level below. And, like, they just couldn't stop Titus Davis. Like, he's worth mentioning on their defense. Like, 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss. Just, like, completely unblockable. Especially in the second half, it seemed. Like, he was everywhere. And, like, Mackenzie Milton, like, not his flashiest day, but he had a touchdown dropped. He still threw for 3 touchdowns, 268 yards. Like, just, like, a solid effort by them. And like, one thing that really stood out was how they just attacked, like, certain aspects of the UC defense. Like, they just got guys one-on-one. And their receivers and backs are so fast. And, like, especially with how they used their backs in the passing game. Like, they almost had no chances sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like, I don't want to belabor the Mike Denbrock point, but he has to know going into that game that UCF is probably going to have better athletes all over the field. UCF's going to know that, and they're going to lean on that strength. So you have to figure out more creative ways to take advantage of that aggressiveness, either with, like, sluggo routes up the sidelines, or slants, or, like, slip screens we talked about, or those little flares out to the tight end in the flats. Like, do we even see one of those on Saturday night? I don't remember seeing one. I feel like Denbrock, you know, he gets a lot of credit for what he's done between last season and this season in terms of making a good running game almost like elite level in a lot of ways. I mean, they did rumble for 4.5 yards per carry on Saturday night against a pretty solid defense. And from an S&P Plus standpoint, he's raised UC's offense from 100th to like 75th, which is pretty solid considering you have like a ragtag offensive line, very few playmakers on the outside, and you're playing freshmen all over the place. So that's why I'm torn, Scott, is because I see the one hand where he comes into a game with a certain game plan and just keeps sticking to it, sort of like what Jones and Bajakian did back when they were here two regimes ago. And then I feel like I have to give him kind of the benefit of the doubt with given what personnel he's actually working with.
Yeah, that's fair. Because like it is like his second year. But like he's the one guy on the staff where like we've seen where he did like in other places. And like we saw like his Notre Dame offenses amazing. And like the offenses come up some, but like just in the S&P ranks, like just using that as the barometer since like those numbers can go back, like they've raised 14 spots with like more talent. Like granted, like your quarterback is like a first year starter. But it's like some of those things that weren't there last year. Like your efficiency's really improved overall, but it started to slip in conference play.
Yeah.
And it just seems like once some of these teams have tape on them, like they're really kind of predictable. But the turnovers kind of really kill because they didn't turn the ball over. Well, they did. They had a -5 turnover margin last year. But like their expected turnover margin is not supposed to be -5. And a lot of it is your quarterback like fumbling the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about what, seven points given up by the kicking game. I'd have to go through and look at it for like what, you know, of those three fumbles, what actually turned into UCF points. Let's see, there's one. This is great. Start killing airtime, Scott.
There's one before the half that ended their long drive. They fumbled their first drive of the second half, and it was a missed field goal. Then they fumbled the third time, and that was the last touchdown UCF scored.
Okay, yeah, that was the only one I saw. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 14 total points there off of miscues. Like, that's a big difference in a tight game like this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they had opportunities to score on two of those drives, and like you shot yourself in the foot and cost yourself points in a game where you needed to finish drives so badly. And like that's like really belabor the point, but like that's the difference between Central Florida and everybody else in the league is that they finish those drives, like they get those points. They've done it the last 2 years, and like that's why they're so hard to beat, because when you give their offense chance after chance to make big plays, they're going to make them eventually. Like, they'll find some ray of light, and then one of their receivers will just be open.
Yeah.
They're definitely the best team in the league, and obviously, like, they won the conference again. Like, despite having the ball only 22 minutes, they just kind of, like, put it on UC, and 400 yards in 22 minutes, 6.6 yards per play. Like, we haven't seen that done to this defense all year.
Yeah, that was the scariest part, is that we come into this game thinking, okay, let's play ball control offense. Let's keep, you know, McKenzie Milton off the field. And they still scored 38 damn points. Like, Jesus. They're just, that was a train wreck Saturday night. But yeah, again, I mean, it wasn't anything that, like, I feel like a lot of us expected a closer game, but I don't know how many people really, truly thought that was going to, you know, be a different outcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point, especially, like, you look at the field position game, something so important for them. Like, UC's average drive starts at the 25, UCF starts at the 34. Like, you just can't play from behind like that the entire game. Like, they're just so good. And, like, so... I think they're pretty well coached, and they were really well coached last year. They're just, right now, they're the gold standard of the league.
Yeah.
And with, like, Mackenzie Milton back there, it's, like, just so poised. And, like he's kind of had, like, almost like a down year statistically, but he's just so good that, like, you know he's going to make something happen.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that he's only a junior. He's probably going to come back for a senior year, and you can probably expect next year's game at Nipper Stadium to be like a night game for a little exacting of revenge for Saturday night. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think next year they could definitely beat him. I mean, with another year of basically the same UC roster coming back and at home in Nippert on Saturday night, and hopefully they make it a blackout game, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, hopefully all the circumstances will go UC's way to enable that to happen for next season.
Right.
Like, I just mean mostly the coaching situation, because now we've seen Fickell thrown in, like, every single open position rumor the last couple of weeks, and he's 100% going to be a hot name this offseason. Like, they've turned around way too much, and this really national spotlight game, like, did nothing to, like, really quell that heat down. So hopefully no good jobs come open and he stays next year. But even if he goes, I think he's really done, like, a pretty good job at least balancing the program from when, like, Tuberville just, like, took a torpedo to it.
Yeah, who's more likely to leave, Luke Fickell or Marcus Freeman after this season?
Oh, that's a good question. Like, Marcus Freeman, I would say him first, just because he's going to get a big time job. I think, like, with his, like, recruiting, and, like, he's turned this defense, like, so much. Like, a top 20 defense, advanced stats, like, a top 10 defense and, like, every other stat. It's, like, I really don't know what more it would take to get a job at a big place. Because those coordinator positions churn over so much. And, like, he's really earned it. He was, like, an unknown, and he's, like, really shined through. Like, Fickell would depend on what job was open, but Freeman, I think, definitely earned a promotion.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I feel like if you're Fickell, you've proven that you can, with the right resources, which, I mean, UC has more resources than a lot of the G5, he can turn in a double-digit win team and, you know, really rebuild a program. I don't know if he settles for, like, a mid-tier P5 job. Like, let's say Jeff Brohm goes to Louisville. I don't know if he settles for Purdue. Like, Purdue is, like, one of the cheapest P5 gigs in the country. Like, they just do not spend money. They have never opened their wallets up until Jeff Brohm. And who knows if they're going to do the same thing for the next coach. I mean, it's paid dividends with Brohm, and they can see that, you know, hey, you do get a return on investment if you actually spend money in the most important program that you have at your school. But who knows if that would happen going forward. And if I'm Fickell, I look at that and I say, I could probably come back and maybe go undefeated next season at UC and stump for, like, I don't know, like, Michigan State. Like, maybe Auburn comes open next year. Maybe Willie Taggart continues to flame out at Florida State and he gets that gig. Like, he could, I mean, if he comes back to UC and wins another double digit wins, he could parlay that into a high tier P5 gig.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the major thing that would worry me about Purdue is that it's, like, relatively close to here. Like,
oh yes.
Like, the Cincinnati area. And so, like, he obviously, like, has, like, amazing recruiting ties to Ohio. And, like, that's kind of, like, a program that's really improved, like, their recruiting. Like, if he, like, jumped over there, it seems like he'd be able to keep that momentum going. Albeit, like, in the, like, a tough conference to win. It's, like, he has a chance to win big at Cincinnati. And, like, at Purdue, It's like you can probably get more of the spotlight, like winning there, just because they're in the Big Ten. But it seemed like it'd just be so much harder to like win consistently there.
Yeah, because like Purdue, I feel like it's one of those situations where they need to hire an outstanding game day coach who can kind of overcome some of Purdue's like intrinsic issues they have in terms of like facilities and recruiting and stuff like that until like the program catches up to what the coach expects their program to be in the Big Ten. I mean, that's kind of what Jeff Brohm has brought there. He's an outstanding offensive mind, and the facilities are sort of catching up, and the investment in fundraising is sort of catching up. If you replace him with Fickell, you know, Fickell has to kind of prove that he's, I mean, he definitely has that defensive mind. I don't know how much of that is Freeman. He definitely seems to know his shit on that side of the ball, as opposed to the last defensive coach that came here. And for him, is he going to like actually work well enough with the administration at Purdue to really keep that investment going? I don't know. I think that would be the biggest concern I have, like, is exactly what you mentioned. You have more competition in the already very dense UC market or Cincinnati market for recruits. Like, if he goes to like the SEC, that would concern me a little bit less. Of course, then he's recruiting in the SEC, and he's going to have the top tier conference to recruit to. But yeah, having the proximity to Purdue, like only a couple of hours up the road, would be very concerning.
Because like we don't really know if like being a Big Ten coach is something he'd like want in his heart to be, and like if it was, it's like oh, good luck. But it seems like Purdue, I don't know, is like Purdue a better program than Cincinnati?
Like, yes.
I don't know, only because it's
in the Big Ten.
Okay, like fair enough. Like success wise, the last like decade plus, like it's definitely Cincinnati. But like just like with buzz and everything, it's like been Purdue since Brohm got there. And like Fickell, he's not like the like sexiest name coach, but like he gets results. And like it's clear, like Ohio State's defense when he was there was good, and like since he's been Cincinnati's coach, their defense has been bad. Like so, like he definitely can coach, like is part of that scheme. So like, I don't know. I didn't think there would be rumors of him leaving this fast, but then again, we didn't think they'd win 10 games unless they get dramatically upset against East Carolina. Which we can talk about in a second. But, like, that's part of, like, the spoils of success. Like a monster year where like, they're playing in national spotlight games on week 12. Like, that just comes with the territory.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, if we're in the enviable, if we're in the position where UC has to deal with a coach that leaves every 3 years, but we get to deal with exciting seasons like this most of the time, I would definitely take that trade off over what we have with Tommy Tuberville for 4 years. Like without a doubt, like I'd rather deal with the coaching turnover, et cetera, because I feel like a lot of fans, they view UC as a stepping stone, and yes, UC is a stepping stone, but guess what? To some extent, Oregon is a stepping stone. One of their coaches left there and went to the NFL. Another coach was there for a season and went to Florida State, like Oregon. You know, you'd think that'd be a landing spot. There's really only like six solid landing spots, or a solid what do you call them? Like a program where a coach is never gonna leave, like in Alabama and Ohio State. They'll only leave when they want to leave, or if they just are completely terrible and have to be fired. Everybody else, it's a stepping stone. And if UC is a stepping stone in winning 10 games, two out of every three seasons, I would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Like outside of like the major jobs, or like jobs that guys have ties to, like I guess like Dan Mullen at Florida. Even though Florida is like a prestige job. That's like people jump from those jobs all the time. So, but I don't think it's a big deal like that. And like, as long as like you're stuck out of the playoff, and like this conference is going to be like, despite having a team go undefeated probably 2 years in a row, like that just sadly comes with the territory. And we've seen what almost every team in this league change their coach for the last like 3 years.
Yeah, and from what we've seen, like, and we've talked about this a lot in the past, the AAC has proven to be, like, a marquee sort of stepping stone conference between the rest of the G5 and the P5. Like, a coach knows they can come to an AAC school, win for a couple of years, and they could potentially parlay that into a Tennessee, a Notre Dame, a Michigan State, a Texas, a Baylor, I guess, you know, like a very high-paying, high-profile gig that the other G5 schools can't offer. So, like, if I'm Cincinnati and Luke Fickell leaves after, let's say, this season or next season, I wouldn't be worried at all that you could hire not necessarily like the cream of the crop from like the up and comers below, like, you know, a Neil Brown type person or a Scott Satterfield type coach. But you could you could throw a lot of money at certain good up and coming coaches and probably land a decent one, more than likely. You're in a pretty good position if you're UC if Luke Fickell does leave.
Yeah, and like the coordinator route especially has seemed really great for this league.
That too, yeah.
Like Central Florida, like they went after Frost, who was like an excellent offensive coordinator. Same with like Josh Heupel, who if like probably won't spring after this year, but like after next year, if they have another great year, he'll probably look for bigger jobs. And Fickell was obviously Ohio State's defensive coordinator, but so. Like, you could go for a splashy hire like that, and with, like, what the job Fickell's done, it's, like, proving you can turn around the Cincinnati program and immediately put it at the top of the league. I think it's a pretty attractive job for, like, a lot of guys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at UC in particular, you've proven yourself that you can send coaches on to higher-level gigs if you have success. And, I mean, you're in one of the hottest recruiting grounds in the country. You can go out your door and find good 4- and 5-star prospects. UC is in an enviable position should Luke Fickell leave. Like, I wouldn't be concerned at all. Especially, I mean, because like the guy who brought in Fickell is still here. You know, Mike Bone has apparently has an eye for talent and has a track record of hiring some decent coaches. You know, Dan Hawkins notwithstanding, but. So,
yeah.
Let's look at ECU.
Yeah, yeah. But kind of like the other end of the spectrum, where like they're probably going to be looking for a new coach, given where their season's going. Although they are coming off a big win over UConn, where they scored 41 straight points, and since changing their quarterback to Holton Allers.
You just looked that up.
And we talked about him a couple weeks ago because he put up like a monster game. He's thrown for 1,600 yards, 11 touchdowns, 2 picks, and run for 647 yards, not counting sacks, and 6 touchdowns. Like, he's been like their lone bright spot since he became the starter. Except they're like still trash. Their offense is 117th in S&P plus. Like, they're just not very good.
He leads the team in passing and rushing by, like, a good margin for rushing. 571 yards for Holton Allers and 335 for the actual running back. And he has double the amount of touchdowns. What is this offense? It is trash, but I don't even know what they're even trying to do.
Him run for his life. It seems like what they're trying to do on the offense.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't have many thoughts on this game. This game's at 3:30 at Nippert. UC's like a 20-point underdog favorite. I don't know. I don't know how UC doesn't come into this game and absolutely curb stomp ECU to, you know, get their 10th win of the season.
Yeah, I don't really either. Like, I guess you can give, like, ECU kind of, like, partial credit for hanging in with some of these teams late in the year. Like, Central Florida didn't play Mackenzie Milton in that game, and it's 37-10. Like, they played Memphis kind of tough, but like, then they still lost 59-41. Like, they almost beat Tulane, which I know isn't saying a ton. Like, then they stomped UConn. So, like, they're, like, playing at least decently. And they have, like, one, like, major receiving target. Like, Trevon Brown has 150 targets. And they still have two games left. And he's got 150 targets, which is, like, kind of insane. Like, a 1,000-yard receiver with 9 touchdowns. It's like, you know, like, where the ball's going in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, and then their defense has been, like pretty solid for such a bad team. Like, they have a standout all-conference player in Nate Harvey. Their defensive end has 23 tackles for loss, 12.5 sacks. So, like, there's at least, like, one guy to watch on both sides of the ball. But they're, like, really not good. And UC's done a number on those teams at Nippert this season.
Yeah, that's a good point. This seems like your kind of typical ECU team where they've got a couple of standouts who put up decent yardage and really not much else around them. Like, to your point, like, Nate Harvey is a monster on the defensive line, 13.5 sacks like you mentioned. But most of those sacks came against South Florida, Old Dominion, and UConn. Like, I mean, against like a team like UCF, he didn't have a single sack. Memphis, he had one sack. Houston, he had one sack. Now, I mean, all of those teams probably have better offensive lines than what UC's offering at this late part of the season. But yeah, like if you're the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, you're basically doubling up Trevon Brown in the defensive backfield, and you're double teaming Nate Harvey along the offensive line, and just hoping everyone else can just outperform their opposite side of the ball, their opposite guy on the ball. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think there's certain aspects of ECU that should probably be cause for concern, but they're just so bad. If UC jumps out to something like a 14-point lead after the first two drives, it's over.
Yeah, like ECU's problems, almost like what UC's problems were last year, is like there's not enough on the defensive side of the ball to carry the offense. Like, their defense, it's like kind of interesting. Like, it's like they're not great. Like, they have like their pressure rate is like 9th in the country. It's like they can like get after at that end. But then, like, their offense is just so terrible that their defense is on the field all the time. And, like, they have good special teams. Like, their kicker is 18-20. But, like, if you never end up in the red zone, can you really score a lot of points?
Yeah.
No, that's why your kicker has to be really good. This team shouldn't really move the ball consistently on the Bearcats. And East Carolina's been so terrible on third downs, like one of the worst in the country. Like one of the worst, like their red zone ranks are all in the 100s. It's like that's another bad thing for them. Like UC should really come out and stomp them. Like I expect a big game from Ritter. Like another big game from Michael Warren to cap off the season.
Yeah, there's such a weird oddity. They're fourth in total defense in the conference. And their turnover margin is second to last. Like they're turning the ball over one more time than the opponent every single game. Now a lot of that is before Holton Ahlers was the quarterback, but the point still needs to be made. Exactly what you mentioned, their defense can keep them in games, but their offense is just so terrible that they can't keep up if the opposing team's offense even has a little bit of success. Which, I mean, for all of UC's issues, they've at least had a little bit of success offensively in a lot of these games.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, UC's offense isn't, like, Memphis level. Like, who really put a number on East Carolina. Or, like, Temple scored 49 points against East Carolina. Like, also on the road. It's like, their defense hasn't really traveled very well. then it should be a huge win. And even if like East Carolina keeps it like kind of tight with their defense, like they won't the entire game. At least I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I can kind of see this being, I don't know, a little bit pointsy. I don't know. I don't trust East Carolina to come to Nippert on senior day and put up that many points. I mean, the over-under is only like 51. That suggests something like a 35-15 UC win. I mean, that sounds about right. Like that sounds about right for given, you know, what we've seen for UC this season.
Yeah, and just what we know from like East Carolina's offense, like outside of the UConn game where they scored 55 points, they don't score that much. Like if they cut something like the 35-14 or 35-13, something right in that range kind of just feels perfect.
Yeah. So.
Like East Carolina, it's like
this, go ahead.
It seems like it would just be either annoying for a half. Or UC will just jump out to a big lead and then the game will be, like, who cares what happens after you're up, like, 24-3.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what do you have for this, Scott? I mean, you kind of have, like, right around where the line says, like, you know, 35-15, something around there.
Yeah, I'd go a little bit higher for UC. I think they'll hit 40.
Really? Yeah.
I think it'll be, I'll say 42-13. I just can't see, like, the Bearcats offense, like, not thriving. They've been really good at home. Like, 35, 42, 37, 34, yeah. 63. Like, they've been cooking at home this year. So I think they're going to put up a big points game.
Yeah, I think it stays relatively low, not low, but like, you know, kind of right around where the over under has it, something like 35-15. Because I get this feeling that Hayden Moore is going to get a decent amount of run in this game because it's senior day. Like, I don't know if he starts. I wouldn't be surprised if he started, but I could see him if UC's up something like 4 touchdowns after halftime. I can see him playing most of the second half.
Oh yeah, like I think if he doesn't start, we might get like the token like one or two drives early. He's definitely going to play.
Yeah. So I mean, it should be fun if you have CBS Sportsnet. If you want to try to, you know, duck out from your family for a couple of hours, you know, tune in on 3:30 on Friday. It should be a good one.
And it's the last home game of the year, like definitely something to be excited for.
Yeah, at the very least, like after we went through Saturday night, all of that energy, all of the ups and downs, well, mostly downs after the first quarter, it'd be nice to kind of like settle in, try to, you know, huddle in a basement away from your family if you're trying to get away from them for a little bit. I know I will be, and just watch a little bit of relaxing UC stomp down football for about 3 hours as you kind of lead into the UC George Mason game at 7 on the same channel, which I thought that was a great scheduling coup right there.
That is, it's like a nice little tie-in.
So
yeah, it's like while your whole family is out shopping, you could like stay in, watch some football, take a little nap at halftime.
Yeah,
and watch hoops. Before we go, let's look at the rest of the league real quick, tie it up. Houston beat Tulane 48-17, but obviously not the story of that game, with Houston like falling apart, it seems, at the seams. Like De'Aaron King hurts his knee on like a non-contact injury, he's out for the year. Ed Oliver and like Major Applewhite like argue about Coates. Like Houston plays Memphis in the West title game, like this week at noon on Friday. Like, what do you see happening in that game? So I have really no idea. Memphis is a 7-point.
That is a good question. Is Ed Oliver even playing this week, or is he in the doghouse still?
It sounds like he could play. I don't know. His whole situation is so weird.
Like,
I don't know if he's holding out for the draft or if he can actually play. We'll just assume he does try to play. Like, if he tries to play, I think Houston has a chance. But if he doesn't play, they're going to get killed.
Yeah. Which, so Memphis wins that game. They play UCF, right?
Yes, whoever wins this game wins wins the West. With how the tiebreakers are. So if Houston wins, they'll win it by record. If Memphis wins, they'll win it by the tiebreaker scenario. Which ends up coming down to them beating SMU and Houston. And that's it. Like, they beat SMU and Houston. And
oh, my God. SMU nearly backed into that West title, didn't they?
They did. If they beat Memphis, they would have been right there.
Yeah, because, SMU beats Memphis, Memphis beats Houston. Then SMU's playing UCF, right?
Yeah, because they beat Houston. And they would have beat Memphis.
That is, wow, that would have been a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, 100%.
Good God.
And Tulane, even though they could finish with the same record, they get eliminated because they lost to all those teams.
Yeah. Yeah, that surprise. That Navy's going to finish at the back of the pack in the West, and that is just... Oh, I'm sorry. No, they are not. They're right ahead of Tulsa, but still. That was the biggest surprise of this season, how bad Navy was. We should talk about that in our postseason recap, just how bad Navy was and what the hell happened there, because, man, the West was weird this year.
Yeah, like outside of the Memphis-Houston game for, like, the West division lead, like, the only other stories are, like, this Central Florida go undefeated. They play at South Florida. Like, they're a nice favorite. Like, South Florida look like they're bouncing back against Temple. Like, they go up 17-0. It's like, oh, are they just going to kick Temple's ass? And the answer was, not for the whole game. And they lose the second half 27-0. And Temple just, like, has another nice win. Like, this Temple team, if they didn't get off to such a terrible start, like, they would have been, like, definitely ranked. And maybe even a playoff contender. Not a playoff contender, but a contender to get that G5 spot until they lost to Central Florida.
Yeah, Temple is... Outside of Central Florida, it seems like Temple is playing better than anybody else in the conference. Or in the East, at least. It's interesting if we're looking ahead to next season. Central Florida should be the favorite in the East. UC should be right behind them. But Temple, they're right there. Like, they nearly beat Central Florida. They beat UC on a couple of technicalities and weird plays, but they do have that win. They could be a contender in the East next season. They could even be ranked. Like, to your point, like, if Russo had played the entire season and the whole team had played well the entire season, they could very well be one of the third ranked team in this conference. Interesting what happens when you have a quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. Like, they'll have Russo coming back next year. Like, they do lose Armstead, but they lost him for a majority of their conference games.
They don't need him.
Yeah.
Temple doesn't need a running game anymore. It's weird.
I mean, they'll take him since he's really good. But, like you said, they haven't really needed him as much as they had did in the past.
It's just bizarre. I've never seen, like, when can you name a Temple quarterback? Exactly.
Philip Walker, he played like 55 years for Temple.
He was a running back or slash wide receiver playing quarterback. They had nobody else on the roster, so he had to play the role. He got the short straw.
I think he's in the NFL, isn't he?
Is he?
I don't know. He's on the Colts in the preseason, at least. I think
he's listed as a quarterback.
Of course, because he is a quarterback.
Okay. Well, see, Chris Coyer, Chester Stewart. I'm just going back. Mike Girardi in 2010. Vaughn Charlton. Well, they have had some atrocious quarterbacks at Temple.
If you made me name another quarterback besides Walker, I would have no idea.
Yeah. Damn. Anthony Russo is good, though. Like, he's like Todd McShay's, like, perfect quarterback. Like, he's drooling over him probably when he comes out as a senior.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
6'4", 230, like, big arm. I don't know. They're good. Temple's good. Temple's back.
Do you think he's the second team quarterback, or do you think it's going to be Memphis's quarterback?
Memphis's quarterback, who is, and I'm going to have to look him up, Brady White? Maybe? It's got to be White. He has 24 touchdowns to 5 picks and almost 3,000 yards passing.
That's true. And they play, he's going to go over 3,000 yards when they play Houston.
Yeah. But Russo's up there. And like never in my lifetime would I have thought a Temple quarterback would be in contention for like any kind of any team offense in the conference, like third or fifth.
Another team that like went after a big coordinator, like Florida's defensive coordinator, like that's worked out really well. Like that program has just kept on ticking.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, Russo's number. Yeah, not great. 13 touchdowns, 13 picks. No way he makes a conference team. Tulane hosts Navy. Tulane and SMU, both in the same boat, because they need to win to make bowl games. Like, Tulane hosts Navy, SMU goes to Tulsa. Do they accomplish the dream and get 8 teams from this conference bowl eligible?
Has that never happened before?
I don't know.
I mean, you said it with the confidence of someone who just, like, was throwing out an awesome stat that, you know?
I just leaned into it for this week.
Okay. Well, I guess, yeah, I think, yeah, sure. Navy's bad. Tulsa's bad. Why not?
Yeah, last year they had 7 bowl eligible teams. So comparatively, this would be the dream.
So power 6.
And, like, Tulane last year, like, blew, like, their chance to make a bowl game in the last game of the season. And they lost to SMU. So, like, I hope that they at least get the win. Because, like, they should go to a bowl game.
Right.
And then their coach will probably leave too, Willie Fritz.
I don't know. Like, who's going to hire Willie Fritz? Isn't he, like, 80?
People were talking about him for the Kansas job.
I think he's 60-something.
I think somebody would give him a chance.
See, I feel like if you'd have to be like that, yeah, like Kansas. You'd have to be like that program that's looking for something so different. Because I feel like that's what Tulane did. They were looking for someone to come in and really shake up the program and kind of revitalize it. And they were willing to take a risk on Fritz because even though he had that triple option scheme. Like, I don't think every program out there is going to really go for that. Like, I could see, like, Kansas being one of them that'd be awesome. If Chad Morris gets fired after this year, it'd be hilarious to see Willie Fritz in the triple option in the SEC. Maybe, like, Colorado or Illinois, you know? I don't know.
He probably is too old to get a Power 5 job.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe a more interesting, like, Group of 5 job. Who's to say? Then, like, the last game we didn't really touch on, Temple at UConn. The final, like, ESPN U special of the season. Like, Temple's, like, a 30-point favorite.
Ooh. Oh, boy. You think UConn fires Edsel at the end of this year?
Should fire him into the sun.
Yes. And he can take Bobby Petrino with him. Most despised men in college football.
If they didn't fire Randy Edsel, like, what's their excuse? Like, would they actually have to go winless for them to fire him?
It's like, I mean, we've seen how wonky that contract has been. His buyout must just be insane. Like, they probably just, they probably let him, you know, write his own number in his buyout. I feel like if Edsel doesn't do anything this offseason, like, their offense wasn't terrible this year. Like David Pendel was pretty damn good as a quarterback. I mean, that from a dual threat perspective, the defense was just so bad. Like, if he doesn't completely shake up the defense, at the very least, fire a couple of position coaches. If you're going to keep the coordinator, but man, I don't know. UConn it's such a hard job. UConn is, I don't know. UConn should basically look at Temple and just try to mirror exactly what they do.
UConn's held one team under 38 points this entire season, and it was UMass. They've held two teams under 40 points the whole year, only two. And it was South Florida who scored 38 points. So, I mean, yeah. I don't even know what you do there. Like, they're just so terrible.
Oh my God, they had, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games where they allowed 50 points or more. Cincinnati would have been the 8th, but the UC only scored 49. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, they've given up 49 twice. Like, unbelievable.
Oh, to Tulsa, yeah, wow. Oh man. God, I just, hey, I mean, at least Danny Hurley looked like he's working out, right, Huskies?
Because that's all they care about is basketball, and for good reason.
Well, that's the thing. Like, UConn, I feel like they went after Edsel trying to revitalize whatever they did back in 2010, and it just has not worked out at all. Like, they seriously need to take, like stay in your lane. Know that if you're going to compete, it's going to be on defense and a solid running game, and just run with that, because you're not going to get a good quarterback. You're not going to get playmakers. You're just stick with what you know.
Yeah, and but apparently, like, they don't know anything. It's like they're just screwed forever.
Yeah,
like their plane was stuck on the tarmac after the East Carolina game, which just really shows where their program is. Their whole program is stuck on a tarmac. Well, do you have anything else before we wrap this one up?
No, I'm good. I'm hoping we can wrap up Friday's game pretty comfortably. We can go into conference championship week with some momentum. I mean, UC's not playing any game, but I mean, at least we'll have some good vibes. And then get a pretty good bowl game against a P5 team. Really hoping for not FAU in the Gasparilla Bowl, because that would be disappointing.